Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hammer Down on the Market Scale Network. I'm your host, Mike Bush. And today we're talking returns. You know, we've done some nerdy stuff across the supply chain. We've gotten into demurrage versus detention and why those bills exist. But today we're talking about something we all understand. If you've gone to Amazon, ordered something and not loved it, perhaps tried to return it, you've inevitably probably just either put it back in a box and sent it back, or you've taken it to UPS and it's been super easy. But there's a lot of stuff that happens behind the scenes. And today's guest, Ben Cronsberry, is the head of sales for ChewBoxes. He's going to tell us all the magic that happens. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Excited to be part of the show today.
Absolutely love it, man. So, Ben, let's start with the basics. What is ChewBoxes? What problem are you guys solving?
Well, ChewBoxes is a piece of technology that usually lives on the warehouse floor to help receive, inspect, and disposition returned inventory. And so we sit between the warehouse's WMS system, warehouse management software, and their brand customer's tech stack, which is usually an e-commerce platform like a Shopify, BigCommerce, Magento, and then usually using a returns portal like a Loop Returns, Happy Returns, Aftership. And so that facilitates the return for the buyer. So let's say you buy the shirt online, it doesn't fit you. You'll interact with a Loop portal, get that shipping label, send it back, you know, whether it's dropped off at a return bar network or, you know, through the postal mail. And then when it comes back to the warehouse, that's where ChewBoxes technology is used. So we deploy tablets. So when the parcel comes back, you scan the tracking information and the user, the associate at the warehouse, will see on the tablet exactly what product should be in that box or poly bag, and then how to inspect and disposition it based off of the brand's requirements.
Okay. So Ben, you said something and it really caught my ear. Mm-hmm. If I return a shirt, there's somebody on the back end who makes sure it's the shirt that I'm supposed to be returning. That start there.
Yeah. So oftentimes the buyer will purchase a large, a medium, and an extra large because they're not really sure of what size they need. That's something we call bracketing. Very, very common in apparel and footwear. And so when it comes back to the warehouse, there are mistakes that happen. Could be an honest mistake where the buyer put the wrong size or the wrong color back, and it doesn't match up with, you know, what they've started on the Loop Return or Happy Returns portal. And so the warehouse associate needs to distinguish that. So with ChewBoxes, we can force a UPC scan so that the associate will have to scan the product tag on the box or the hang tag, and the system will validate, yep, that's the right SKU, or no, it's the wrong one. Sometimes though, it's not an honest mistake, and it could be a bad actor or a policy abuser who sends back counterfeit or something that we call wardrobing, where they wear that shirt 100 times, take it to the dinner party, take it to prom, and then they return it looking for a refund. And so there's varying scenarios that happen, but at the end of the day, we're gonna flag anything that shouldn't be part of that return or is missing so that the brand's customer service team can work out that issue with the buyer.
Okay. So going outside of the bad actors or the potentially malicious side of things, mm-hmm. goods are returned. You know, we scan it. The warehouse worker, the frontline worker identifies, okay, this is the right thing that's supposed to be returned. Where do goods go from there?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of different paths and scenarios. So what really needs to happen first is an inspection, or in other words, a grading process. And that's where the brand says, hey, I want you to check for a broken zipper, deodorant stains, pet hair, all sorts of different, what we call attributes. And so the user will use the tablet to basically observe and track what damage is there, if any. And so we can do things like photo capture, so that real-time photos are taken of that piece of inventory. And then even value-added services to potentially refurbish or recondition any damaged inventory. Now, depending if that's successful or not, there are four main outcomes called dispositions that typically happen. The A condition, right? Perfect condition, original packaging, will typically go back to stock to be resold at original cost. Grade B is something that might have a slight scuff or stain, but it's still usable and sellable, but it might be sold at 20-30% off original cost. Okay. The third is usually more of a donation. So going to places like Goodwill or Habitat for Humanity, because that product can still be used and people will still get value out of it, but it won't be sold for profit. And then the fourth, that's kind of your last case scenario, it's damaged beyond repair. That's going to be recycled, destroyed, or, you know, sent to the landfill. And our job is, hopefully that's exception management, and hopefully not the majority of returned inventory. We want as much as possible going back to stock so it can be resold, and then obviously better for the environment as well.
Got it. Ben, how did you get into this? How, who came up with this idea? Where did you fall into this? How did you get into this marketplace?
Well, maybe I'll take a step back and say I fell into the logistics back in 2007 when I was in university looking for a summer job. Ended up working at a 3PL here near Toronto, Ontario, Canada, where I grew up. And over the last 17 years have stayed in logistics, but more on the technology side. And so just recently, I was with Shopify as one of the first external sales hire for the fulfillment network. And basically got laid off the day they sold that to Flexport. And so when I was, you know, looking at joining a new company, I was referred to Two Boxes by some of the executives I had worked at Shopify with, and, you know, joined their team a couple weeks later. Our two founders, Evan and Kyle, had worked at a startup called Outrider, which sells autonomous yard trucks to 3PLs. So they'd go throughout the US touring facilities, and they commonly saw, usually in the corner of the warehouse, an area that looked like a bomb went off. And every time they asked, hey, what's that area over there? They were told, well, that's the return section. And so our analogy to describe that is, think about in a multi-tenant environment in a warehouse, you could have 200 brands there with 200 different tech stacks and channels that they're selling product on. So think of like an interstate or a highway with 10 different lanes. You're going to take those 10 lanes, which is like represents 10 brands or 10 different tech stacks. And when it comes back to the warehouse, it's all merging into one country road, because that road at the warehouse is a standardized process operationally, which is very hard to do at scale, to get all those different tech stacks and sales channels to have one process to process all those returns in one uniform fashion. So that's what Two Boxes' goal is, to standardize. Hey, they could be selling on Amazon, on eBay, on Walmart, doesn't matter. You'll now have one way that's standardized to process their returns and is scalable and efficient.
Got it. Okay. What's been the most interesting thing you've learned along the way here, other than returns used to be just, you know, kind of a big pile of stuff to be dealt with?
Yeah, I would say the complexity and nuances into that inspection. And so typically when we launch a new customer, we're replacing paper, right? Think of paper binders sitting on the warehouse floor. And so when you start to read some of this documentation, some of it's very, very complex. Our largest today has been 160 pages that we've basically digitized into the tablet. So think, if you're a temp worker, first day on the job, could be, you know, you don't speak English as a first language, you're expected to read 160 pages, absorb that knowledge, retain it, and then execute at scale. It's near impossible. And so that's kind of been mind-boggling for me. The other fascinating thing, I think, is kind of these bad actor stories, right? I go into a warehouse and should be some high-end apparel, but you open the box and there's an onion inside. So when I go around and I talk to 3PLs, I ask, well, what's your kind of craziest story you've seen in returns? And you would laugh and be astonished at some of the things I hear. And so, yeah, just some of those kind of things that the normal 3PL or warehouse doesn't really think about, or consumers, right? We don't really think about what happens to the product when it gets back to the warehouse. Kind of uncovering that has been really interesting, and I've been learning a lot.
Got it. So then one of the questions I ask every guest is, you know, if you're talking to somebody who is a young Ben thinking about falling into supply chain, or thinking about purposefully going into supply chain, that's really the idea here. What's the piece of advice you'd give your younger self?
Sure. I always frame things as, think about the customer of a particular product or service, but then think about their customer. So I always call that your customer's customer. And why I think that's important in our conversation today is when you think about D2C e-commerce brands over the last few years, they, through COVID and the pandemic, were trying to create the best experience possible for their buyers, their customers. And what resulted was free returns, wide return windows for their policies, making it frictionless and as easy as possible and convenient for buyers to return their product. But times are changing. They're starting to tighten their return policies. Some of them are starting to charge for returns because what's happened is a lot of fraud and bad actors have sprung up trying to, you know, take advantage of some of these opportunities. So if I'm talking to someone younger, be aware of where these trends are going and what's going to happen next. And usually you can start to keep your finger on the pulse by asking your customer, who are your customers and what's impactful for you? And how do you see times are changing from macroeconomic things or, you know, certain trends in their particular industry? And just be aware of, you know, what's coming next, not just next year, but maybe 5-10 years down the road. So you can get ahead of these things and be part of companies that are, you know, kind of at that ground floor to take advantage of the opportunities versus being more reactive and too late to the game.
Yeah. Ben, one of the things you talked about here that I thought was really interesting was sort of, you know, it sounded like it was, you know, we've all gotten used to buy online, pick up in store. Is there a sort of reverse component to that where it's buy online, return in store is sort of the future? I know when, as you were talking about the complexity of, you know, what happens in a warehouse and get everything back in, is there a play there that retailers will maybe not charge for, you know, the return component, but they'll say, hey, look, it's $5 to return a good unless you bring it to the store?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think what the answer is, it depends on the size of that merchant, right? What's their outbound volume look like? What's their return rate? And even things like, what's the dimensions and the weight of their physical product? Is it flat pack apparel that's only a couple ounces? And, you know, when you put it in the mail, even if I'm in Canada sending it to LA, it's not that expensive. Or right, are you selling a coffee machine which has dim weight and as close as you can get to the warehouse is really going to help with the postage? So there's a bunch of different variables there. But generally speaking, I think it is smart for brands to have that omni-channel reverse logistic network, just like they do on outbound. If they're selling primarily on Shopify, but then also sell on Amazon and Walmart and eBay, why not have the same approach for returns where, okay, someone bought it off Shopify, but if you've got a return bar network at a UPS store or at a Kohl's, something like that, it could be very convenient for your buyer to go in and drop that off when they're doing another errand. And so I think to have diversified return channels is smart and going to suit most, if not all, of your consumers. But there is one major drawback that I'll call out. So if you're a smaller merchant and maybe you're only selling, you know, 50, 100 orders a day online, and you're using some of these physical return bar networks, it might be very, very slow for them to consolidate enough inventory to then send it back to the warehouse for inspection. So that's my one caution is don't think that that's, you know, the silver bullet and it's going to be the solution to all your problems, because if it takes 30 days, 40 days for that return bar network to consolidate enough for one pallet to send it back LTL, that could be a bad buyer experience if your refunds aren't being triggered until post-inspection.
Got it.
Right?
Got
so it's kind of a trade-off between speed and cost and ultimately that convenience for the buyer.
Sure. Ben, what haven't I asked you that I should have?
I think it's talking about like policies themselves, because that's what I think is the major trend here, that brands are starting to take a hard look at which buyers of theirs are costly to them. Who returned every single outbound order that gets shipped to them? Who sends back product that is covered in mud and dog hair and has been worn 100 times? And there's been interesting things we've seen in our data set now that we just passed 500,000 of return units flowing through two boxes. we could see from the same email address across multiple brands and multiple warehouses, that same bad actor being what we call a serial returner across different brands and geographies. And so that's something to keep an eye on is, hey, how does a brand react to someone who keeps returning things in bad shape? Well, I think it ends up being they turn returns off entirely for that buyer, or they start charging out of pocket as like a one-time fee to them, or maybe they're just closing the window from a 30-day return policy to maybe only 7 days. So there are a few different countermeasures there, but I think that's something for everyone listening in to be aware of, and that's coming. Amazon's already started this. You might not know it, but there's machine learning and AI figuring out who are the bad actors and who needs to pay for a return versus who gets free returns. So think about that as a consumer as well. There are brands that are building profiles on you based on your online activity tied back to your email address. And so I think in the next few years, we'll start to see that hyper-personalized return policy across each individual buyer.
Ben, final question for you. If anybody listening wants to get in touch, find out more, learn more about ToBoxes, et cetera, what's the best way to do so?
Yeah, you're welcome to visit our website, which is toboxes.com. You're welcome to email me. My email address is ben@toboxes.com. Or hit us up on LinkedIn. We're always posting new content on there. We're going to be doing a ToBoxes tour this summer throughout the U.S. in different cities and 3PL hotbeds. So we'll be hosting different happy hours and networking events. So if you are in any of those towns, we'd love to host you and meet you in person and connect you with our customers, our brands, and our partners. So like we talked about earlier, we're big into partner channels and networking and connecting with folks throughout the industry. So even if you're not involved with warehousing or D2C fulfillment, I would still love to meet you and talk logistics. So hit us up on any of those channels and look forward to talking to you.
Ben Cronsbury for ToBoxes. Thank you so much for joining us on Hammer Down. To all the listeners and viewers, thank you for checking us out. We'll see you soon. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, y'all.